Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery with special guest host
Melissa Antoinette Fabello.
Right now we are at the National Sex Ed Conference in, now don't get too jealous, restrain yourself, East Rutherford, New Jersey. So we are right next to a condom dress. It's kind of beautiful. All the condoms were dyed pink, and they made a lovely little short skirt situation with some
ruffles.
Shoulders.
There are ruffles.
Yeah.
Ruffles are involved.
I wish I knew more about fashion to describe...
to describe this dress, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. There's lovely attention to detail, and it presumably would keep you safe in the rain.
Yeah, and Timmy took a picture of it.
Yeah, so there'll be a picture. So we are at the National Sex Ed Conference and checking out some tables, and Melissa and I are going to be presenting later on using social media to do sex ed. I don't know what the fuck we know about that. What do we know?
We know a lot. I mean, we're awesome at it, so I think that's all we really need, more so than actual knowledge.
And what are you looking forward to most at this conference, other than our presentation? Your org needs a Twitter handle.
Besides hanging out with Timmery, the thing that I'm most excited about, I don't know, actually probably seeing people that maybe I haven't seen in a minute, is always nice to meet people, and also just to learn a few things. I do domestic violence prevention education, and there's a workshop on that, on domestic violence. I'm excited about that. There's one on body image, which I'm excited about too. So I'm excited to be here and to learn some more stuff about shit that I care about.
Cool. Right on. So we'll be checking back in through various phases of the day to let you know what's going on and describing other weird things that we see. And I'll take pictures and I'll post them. Cool. So right now I am talking to Kelly, who is going to be presenting later today. What are you presenting on?
I'm going to be presenting about body image and how we can incorporate body image into sexuality and how it affects sexuality. So.
That's what I was talking about.
Ooh. That's the one Melissa was just talking about.
Excellent. It combines two of my favorite things, sex and bodies. And, you know, bodies are a big part of sex, and I think it's something we often ignore when we teach about sexuality. So look forward to that.
Is this your first time here at this conference?
It's my second time here, but it's my first time presenting.
Ooh, very exciting. So we are going to hear more about this later. We'll be checking back in with Melissa about how it went. So we'll give you a grade.
Oh, dear. I'm a little nervous now.
No, you're going to be awesome. This is very exciting. All right, so thanks, Kelly Gaynor. Kelly Gaynor, awesome. So now I'm standing in the hallway, and there is this a bottle of wine?
Huh?
Is that a bottle of wine?
Yes.
Awesome. So I'm talking to Rick. What are you here at the conference to do?
I'm here to educate the sexual educators about fertility and women's reproductive health. And we do that through smartphone apps.
What is your organization?
It's called Fertility Council.
So, what does your app do?
It tracks women's menstrual cycle, and so it gives women the ability to know, have fertility awareness through the BBT or the calendar method.
Cool, very cool. So, like, women can have a little bit more power over their own bodies as opposed to, like, having all this, like, external stuff controlling when they do and do not get pregnant.
Correct. Absolutely.
Awesome.
And then it's also, we have support websites to go to so that they can, if there's any question that can't be answered, they can go to our forums on our support websites and it will tell them, you know, put down their question and they will answer.
Cool. So that was Rick from Fertility Council. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So now I'm standing over by the poster session talking to Andrew. Challenging Casanova is the name of your project. Tell us a little bit about it.
So this is the first book that's been available to the general public that talks about how we raise young men as far as what they should do in the realms of dating and sexuality.
Okay.
So I see some pictures. We got Fonzie. We got some Charlie Sheen situation. Yeah,
the primary image that we put out there is that young men, whether we're talking about teenagers or unmarried young adults, is that they should really just be sleeping around and they shouldn't be forming ongoing relationships.
What do you want to get across to people about those depictions?
The big one is that that's actually very uncommon. There are very few guys that really live like that for any amount of time, certainly a number who might try it for 6 months or a year. But we also need a broader range of images out there, whether we're talking about what's in the media or what shows up in sex ed curricula or how parents approach it, that says that there's a range of stuff that some guys really do just want to date one person and find a life partner and that's it. That maybe serial monogamy is a fine thing, especially if we think about the fact that most guys start dating in their mid-teens but aren't going to get married until their mid-20s. We need some more images out there and some more variabilities instead of teaching everybody that guys just want to have sex with everyone and don't ever want relationships.
I think that probably has effects on both young men and on young women. Like, I would imagine that changes how a lot of people view things. What do you think is the application of this for women as well?
Well, the big one is that if we're teaching everyone that guys just want to have sex and don't want relationships, then by extension, what we need to teach girls is that they need to control the sexual behaviors of the young men that they're getting involved with, and that they can't really have their own sexual desires, or that they need to do some kind of game playing where they, to use an old metaphor, hook the guy by offering sex in trade for relationship. So, you know, it doesn't really give them a whole lot of sexual agency, but it puts them in charge of his sexuality.
I'm seeing up on your board, issues to discuss includes, and I love this, cuddling is one of the things, cuddling and orgasm. What does cuddling have to do with this?
One of the things that we do, mostly with our romantic partners, although we get the occasional news story about cuddling parties now, we cuddle. We, as human beings, as a species, we love physical contact. We seem to be built for physical contact. But we teach guys that they can't touch people except in a sexual way. What we know in the reality is that when guys have an ongoing partner, they do cuddle. They will often tell us in interviews that they like cuddling. And they tell us that sometimes they just want to cuddle. They just want to hold or be held. But we don't have any framework that we put out there for guys to tap into this or to think about it. So that's one of the things that we need to start teaching them about and asking them about.
Very cool. So that was Andrew Smiler, and his book is Challenging Casanova. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I just sat in on my first session, which was Sexuality Education and Developmental Disabilities, What Works, What Doesn't. It was very interesting, and we discussed, first of all, what is it about sexuality education for people with developmental disabilities that is different than what it is regularly, sexuality education? Because ultimately, what we came to discuss is that it's sort of a microcosm of sex ed in general, that a lot of messages about sex ed are that you don't need to know this stuff. It's not important for you to know, and you can't handle it anyway. And so for someone with a developmental disability, all of that is just sort of exaggerated, and it's just so much more intensely fought. And so much of this stuff comes to, you know, what are the obstacles to sex ed, and the list is just longer than it is for people without developmental disabilities. And a lot of it's coming from parents who don't think it's relevant for their kids or don't want to have that conversation, because a lot of people don't want to think about their kids having sex. And when it comes to people with developmental disabilities, they might have that feeling even more. But it's very important that we have these conversations with developmentally disabled people, because, I mean, not only are they facing the same biological and social issues as a lot of other people, but it's also exaggerated because they are more likely to be susceptible to sexual abuse. They also might possibly be more likely to commit offenses because they don't realize it. If you don't give someone boundaries, if you don't talk to them about what is healthy sexuality, how are they expected to know what is not?
So discussing anatomy, safe and healthy and socially appropriate masturbation, you know, what is private, what is public, and definitely, of course, consent. So we need to protect this group from, you know, from abuse and unbalanced power in relationships, same as we would with any other relationship. So one of the questions that I asked them was, what is the difference if a developmentally disabled person is wanting to engage in sexual activity with another developmentally disabled person versus someone who is not? And the answer I got was, aside from issues of guardianship, where someone might have actually another person whose input matters, like legally, we just want to look at every relationship from a safety standpoint and just talking about what is okay about this power dynamic. It's the same as like when you're discussing it with two young people, one who's like 13, one who's like 17, just looking at what are these two individuals bringing to the table and what are the risks associated with their involvement with each other. So rather than thinking about the developmentally disabled student as needing to be protected, it's more about a ring of safety. So rather than like squelching them and squelching their information gathering, teaching them that there is someone that they can talk to about the fact that they have personal rights, that they have the right to say no. Someone who might be developmentally disabled might get used to having their no's be ignored. So it might be a matter of like, you know, you have to do this now, and they say no, and then, you know, the guardian or the staff member is like, you have to do it, whatever. So they learn that no doesn't matter, which is really problematic because then later when someone wants to engage in a sexual activity with them, they perceive their no as not mattering. So one of the suggestion was, if they don't have a choice, don't offer a choice. So if you are the caretaker or you're the staff member, don't ask them, do you want to go to this thing, if they really don't have an option to go to it or not. Like if they have to go get on the bus right now, just present it as such. So these were a few of the takeaways. So far this has been very cool. I got some cool handouts, some cool resources. There are a lot of great videos and books to talk about safer sexuality behaviors, about private versus public behaviors, masturbation, etc., for these populations. So really cool resources that I found out about, including a lot of the work by Dave Hinsberger. So far, so good. The last session I attended was about body image stuff. So you might remember earlier we were talking to Kelly about how she was going to do her presentation on body image. And so we went to that, and it was sort of utilizing the circles of sexuality idea, which you may or may not recall from a previous episode where I went and talked to some Widener students who are going to be RAs. And we talked about there's a way to conceptualize sexuality as being multiple parts. So it's not just like, as Kelly put it, or as one of her professors actually put it, putting something hard into something wet. That's not everything. There's much more to it. There's the sensuality, there's the intimacy, there's how you perceive of yourself as a sexual being, including like gender and sexual orientation. There are issues related to sexualization, so that would include like harassment and sexual assault and all that kind of stuff. So there's like the five different ways. And it's a Venn diagram, so they obviously all overlap. So using this model, how does body image affect all of these different circles? Like, so if you have negative body image, how does that affect whether you do self-exams, whether or not you advocate for yourself to be able to insist on partners using safer sex behaviors, whether or not you are going to pay attention enough to your body to notice that you're having symptoms of pregnancy or an STI, whether or not you're going to make healthy relationship choices. So how obviously all of these different things are all interconnected, even though body image is part of one of the circles of sexuality, but it still affects all these other things, and both in terms of like you just being a happy person, having a satisfying relationship, and also doing things that are good for you. And so we got a little bit of a list of like ways to encourage people to love their bodies more, and most of it always comes back to the idea that your body is your vehicle and it does so many things for you, and that, you know, the external things are nice. It's nice when your body looks like you want it to look, but the important thing is that it does the things that it needs to do, that it brings you pleasure, that it allows you to get from place to place, that you are covered in skin that, you know, allows you to touch people and other people can touch you. So just, yay, nice things like that. So speaking of loving your body, I'm going to go eat some food now. So Maybe you should do the same. I just came from what has thus far been my favorite breakout session workshop I have ever been to at the National Sex Ed Conference. And this is not my first time here, because I've been around this rodeo for a little bit. But I just came from this amazing session led by Karen BK Chan, I posted when she first created the Jam video in early 2013, and it was just about reconceptualizing sexuality overall, and thinking about sexual activity as being like a jam session that musicians engage in. If you haven't seen this video, stop this podcast right this second. Google Jam 2013 Karen BK Chan and watch the shit out of it. And then come back here when you're done with that. So we just had this amazing session where it was very like boundary pushing, and you know, so you got your little comfort zone, and then outside of that is your stretch zone, and then outside of that is like your panic zone. And this was all about like finding that stretch zone, and being really present and being an improviser and thinking about approaching sexuality from a lens of collaboration, where there's not a particular narrative, there's no right, there's no wrong, that sex is like this messy, imperfect process. It's not about getting to a certain place. It's not about X, Y, and Z in this order at this tempo. It's all about just seeing what happens and like constantly being in communication with your partner and really listening. And like what makes a good sex partner is also in many ways like what makes a good improviser, that you are open-minded and that you're able to read other people and you feel okay about looking silly, and that you can be present in the situation and attend to your partner. And so it also changes the way we conceptualize consent, because rather than being like, I have this technical consent, no means no, yes means yes, but like that it's a continuous process, that all the time you're checking in to see that the other person is with you and that they're down for what you're doing. And it's going to be a continuous process because you care. It's not just that you got consent, that you got somebody to say the words yes, or to act like they were into it, or to not say no. Instead, you give a shit and you want to have this reciprocal, collaborative experience. So it was a really incredible workshop to be in, and stay tuned, because she and I are going to have like a full-on podcast episode. I've already arranged that for y'all, because you need this in your life. So Karen BK Chan, go check out the video now, and then look forward to a future podcast when we get this figured out for a new date. So excited! I am geeking out, you guys. I'm geeking the fuck out because I'm talking to Ducky Doolittle. So what brings you here today?
Sex education, specifically around sex toys.
You have some amazing little items. I was just admiring the one that sort of like hugs the vulva. What is that one?
It's called Panty Play.
That's a perfect name. What's its deal?
Okay, so it's shaped essentially like your vulva. So it sort of cups you from clitoris to perineum. And then it has a vibrator. And it's perfect for like tucking inside your panties for hand-free play if you're going down on a partner. Can I say that on the podcast? Okay. Oh, I can say fuck?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So if you're fucking going down on someone, it's perfect. And then also, the way that the bullet slips into it, it's like you can also, it's great if you're kinky and want to like rope it up against someone's vulva, and you can protect their sensitive skin from the ropes if that's what you want to do. So I always say, once you own it, you can play with it any way you want, but it has a lot of possibility, and it's just cute, and it's so silky smooth if you touch it. It's Panty Play.
So what are some of your other things that you brought with you that are your particular favorites?
I like the Echo. The Echo, it looks phallic, but then it has all these ridges all the way down, and it's specifically designed, like, if you know where the G-spot is, it's like on the navel side of the vaginal wall, about an inch and a quarter in. And if you're having sex with a penis or a phallic-shaped toy, it's like the head of the penis, actually on the outstroke, is sort of a speed bump for the G-spot. So what we've done is we've echoed that head shape all the way down the shaft. shaft. And so with each outstroke of this toy, you get like 6 times the G-spot connectivity. And then we've also taken that toy and put a handle on it. So if you have a big body, you're pregnant, a back injury, a shoulder injury, you can actually use this and get really great G-spot connectivity with, you know, the Echo on handle.
How is it talking to this group of people who are all sex educators compared to like every other day when you're talking about this stuff? Is there a difference?
Well, there's actually a surprising amount of sort of reservation and fear. Because you're dealing with people here who are especially in sex education with adolescents or marginalized populations, and they're so used to being persecuted, I think, just trying to teach how to put a condom on a person, much less sex toys. And so it's kind of funny to see them sort of inch their way up. It's like, is it safe to even have this stuff here? You know, and in truth, I think sex toys are an awesome way for people to get consciousness in their body, to learn about their own sexual response. To me, I'm like, of course it is. Come here. You're safe. It's okay. But then we're a very unique company in the sex toy world as well, because education is part of the mission at Tantus. So, you know, we really drive home points about caring for yourself, having toys you can clean so you can stay healthy, you know, educating even like sex toy retail staff how to care for the customers when they come in, how to embrace them. So it takes a lot of courage for people to step into a sex shop quite often. So compassion education is deeply ingrained in the Tantus mission.
So for the people who are not at the conference today, how can they find out more about this stuff and about you, and if they want to hit you up and they want to pester you with more questions, what do they do?
Okay, so the sex toys are at Tantus, I-N-C, TantusInc.com. And I'm Ducky Doolittle, and you can find me at Ducky, like a duck, D-U-C-K-Y, Doolittle, D-O-O-Little.com.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
So earlier, I was telling you what Melissa and I are here at this conference to do was to present on social media and using it to do sexuality education. And we created our own hashtag. It was your org. And we just totally told all these people how to use Twitter. How do you feel about how that went?
I think it went really well. I think that a lot of people got a lot of really good information for how to use social media effectively, both personally and professionally, which is something I think a lot of people struggle with. And I think it's really important. I mean, you made that point about how in order to be a person, you have to be on the internet. That's the law. And I think that, you know, that's not literal, but I also think that it's also a legitimate statement that it is important to have an online presence for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people just don't know how. So I think that we gave them a lot of really good information for how to do that well.
So based on like your assessment of like the audience, what do you think was lacking from their information beforehand?
I think that they were lacking a lot of information about, well, first of all, I think different platforms. I feel like a lot of people had a really good handle on Facebook and people were using Facebook, but a lot of people were like scared of Twitter. People were like, Tumblr, what? I think that that was a really base level lack of information that people had. And then just also, you know, how useful social media can be when you use it correctly. I think a lot of people are like, well, I'm using social media, but I don't have a lot of followers. I'm using social media, but people aren't commenting on my stuff. I'm using it, but it's not engaging enough. What am I doing wrong? And I think that that was kind of the basic level of what people were missing and why they probably came to the workshop.
So far, what has been the reaction? Like, so we had our hashtag and we told people how to contact us. Like, what has happened thus far? Were people live tweeting?
I saw a couple tweets. I did see a couple. I think that the workshop ended up being a little bit more fast paced than we originally had intended it to be. So I think people maybe didn't have enough time. And also, I think a lot of the people who were at the workshop weren't the kinds of people that already have a Twitter application on their phone. So, but I did get at least one tweet from someone who said that, you know, she signed up for Twitter. She's there now, which is awesome. And I mean, I don't know, we just got a lot of really positive feedback about how it was a really useful presentation. I think that was kind of our goal, was to give people skills that they could use when they walked out instead of just information.
So other than our session, which was the best,
true life,
what's been your favorite thing so far?
I went to a workshop this morning on the intersections of domestic violence and reproductive coercion, which was really useful because I work for a domestic violence agency. So I liked that conversation that was going on there, even though it was a lot of information that I already knew. But I thought that it was an important thing to talk about. Really, I'm just enjoying the fact that so many people are here. And that there's such a breadth, there's such like a variety of presentations and workshops to go to that I feel like everyone's getting kind of their fill, and people seem to be happy. Sometimes you go to conferences and people are like, nah, that wasn't that good. I didn't really get anything out of it, but I think people are getting something out of it. Also, lunch was good. Lunch was good.
There was some fantastic cake situation happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Salad had avocados.
Yeah, which is always good. I mean, like two chunks, but they were there. So
yeah, it was legit. So for all y'all burgeoning sex educators, it's definitely a conference to consider. Plus, you'll get to hang out with us.
Yeah, and hanging out with us is the best part of being here.
Obviously. So thanks.
Thank you.
So I'm going to close out now so I can go listen to the keynote, which is Let's Talk, a Candid Conversation About Sex Ed and the Dimensions of Racial Diversity by Trina Scott. So I'm going to go check this out. And I just want to thank you for listening to this episode and coming with me on this adventure. So definitely hit me up if you have any questions or if you want to know more about the workshop that Melissa and I did or about how to find out about any of the other people that I talked to today. So as always, you can hit me up on Twitter. Timmerie_LEIGH. You can find me on Facebook, Sex with Timmerie, and of course hit me up on the website as well. So thanks for listening. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmerie. Sex with Timmerie, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmerie.com, Sex with Timmerie on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmerie_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.